Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I'm Tim and welcome to our podcast, our last podcast for the month of October. We've done a lot of podcasts this month.
I know.
I'm putting a lot out there. So with it being our last podcast in October, we're sticking with our theme of Halloween. And today's podcast is going to be on the Texarkana Moonlight Murders of 1946. The Moonlight Murders involved the Phantom Killer, so named because he has never been found. So technically, they're still at large. We're going to get into that, but before we get into the story, I would like to introduce the very talented, very lovely, and ravishing brown hair beauty, Brandy. How are you, Brandy?
I am ravishing today. I got my face on, so.
You do have your face on. I'm good to see you. Just didn't roll out of bed and come in like you normally do.
I know, right?
Yeah, you got like real clothes on, no sweats.
Yeah.
I mean, you're.
I had a meeting today.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe.
The devil look almost human.
It wasn't
for
people.
I thought perhaps she was.
The devil wears many faces.
I thought perhaps she
was. The devil
does
wear many faces and Prada. And you know, what's the worst thing of your day is to me? You know when life just.
Yeah?
Your day just ain't starting out right because you walk in and you're trying to get to your job and get to your business.
Did you introduce him yet? Because
no,
I thought
no.
We were still focused over on this side
of
the table.
This is still focusing on us.
All right.
You walk by and you look and you see a woman and you like do a little bit of a double take and then you go, ah!
Yeah.
I just did a double take on the devil.
Oh, so you feel dirty or cheap?
Yeah, I didn't like it. I didn't like it.
But she does look lovely.
I didn't
today.
Like it either.
You do look lovely today.
She didn't even know about it. She didn't like it.
It kind of creeps her out, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It does. Makes me feel dirty. After we get done, I'm going to go shower.
I think that would be I don't blame you. Well, you do look quite lovely today. And I have to introduce now, of course, our other...
Yeah, because he's here.
Because he's here. And otherwise, he would just keep talking. one and only, very distinguished, very debonair, very wordy, very inept.
Yes, nice.
The most dangerous man in podcasting, the Honorable Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
How do you think I'm doing today, Tim?
Well, I don't know, Colonel. You seem a little bit
uptight.
I'm
telling you how I'm doing. Okay, what? That was my hand hitting the table for effect.
Yeah, I saw that. I've got headphones on. I heard that. Thank you.
I'm fucking hungry, Timmy. I'm hungry. Where my
damn
sandwich?
Why are you swearing? Why are you swearing?
You know what?
Who was supposed to bring you a sandwich today?
The producer.
Did he bring you said sandwich?
I had a bagel. There's a leftover in a
you
room
scrounged
from
a bagel.
Somewhere. Yeah, I did.
Did you dig it out of the trash?
I got the cream cheese somewhere. I don't know. I think it might have been.
Perhaps your producer was busy writing these scripts and doing research and editing podcasts, doing all the things that the producer does, as opposed to running your errands for you.
You know, and this brings up something, you know, and listeners, I'm sorry if I'm not on the top of my game. My blood sugar a little low.
Maybe you'll pass out. We'll get through this thing in an hour.
Right.
This bring up something that Colonel Bowen wanted to talk to everybody about. And I'm going to need the listeners to get on board with this to leave some messages on the Facebook page and convince Tim that if he wants to keep the Colonel around.
Oh, here he goes on the personal assistant gig again thing.
The Colonel need a personal assistant. Now, goddammit, if I had a personal assistant, you know what else I'd have? I'd have a sandwich in front of me. I'd have a sandwich. I got a half-warm, lukewarm soda here.
How is that my fault?
Because you didn't put my soda in the refrigerator.
Okay, Colonel, let me explain something to you. I know in that Norma Desmond mind of yours that we're
Norma Desmond.
We're like MGM.
Only you could work in a Norma Desmond.
I love it.
Like we're an MGM or Warner Brothers or something. But we have no
money. DreamWorks.
Yeah, we're DreamWorks. We have no money. We have no budget. We have no sponsors. We have no.
We do have sponsors.
We have no real sponsors that give us money. We have no subscribers.
We have two sponsors today.
Have them pay for you.
So, yeah. And they could pay, and I guess I should just go over them. This is a law firm this is a real law firm. It sounds funny. But the law firm is Ditcher, Quick, and Hyde.
Sure.
They're divorce attorneys.
Of course they are.
Very nice.
And now, if anybody watched the Republican debates, and
the third
Trump was talking about getting all the illegals out of here.
Yeah, I didn't see you on that stage, oddly enough.
No, because I'm doing the Dancing with the Stars
now. Okay, you can't do both at once.
Now, how are we going to get rid of 12? They keep saying, how are you going to get... Okay, the colonel hooked up with a security company. They think they can do the job. They can find all the illegals and get them out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sponsoring us today. The name of the company is Juan in a Million. They believe they can find
so
Juan
bad.
In a Million.
That's so bad.
Don't look at the colonel. He just takes the check. So now we got sponsors out of the way.
I just think
personal assistant. I have two choices for my personal assistant.
If you get a PA, I get one.
I want a personal
assistant. Neither of you get a PA. And neither gets a personal assistant.
I want either Kato Kalin.
Kato. OJ, he's probably free.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. He's not shacking up with OJ at this point.
Or I want that pretty Monica Lewinsky.
Didn't we decide that he could get Bobby Trendy?
He could have Bobby Trendy from the Anna Nicole show.
I'll take Bobby Trendy.
Okay, Colonel. Again, we have no money, no budget. We
can we do a GoFundMe for the Colonel personal assistant?
No GoFundMe.
Kato has to live with
you. Well, I tell you what.
Can I get an intern?
Here's what you
can do. Kato has to live with you.
You can convince the University of Cincinnati Department of Communication to give you an intern, you knock yourself out.
Here we go. Well, can we do a GoFundMe on the Facebook page for a personal assistant for the Colonel?
No.
Are there any listeners that want to come in and be a personal assistant?
None of your children want to.
I have no
lunch.
What
makes you think that?
I have no. And here's the other thing we need, Timmy.
What's that?
Now I'm looking over here at the devil, and you can.
She looks quite lovely today.
You can dress up a
Be very careful.
You can dress up a devil, but she's still a devil.
Yeah.
A devil by, I believe it was Shakespeare who said, a devil by any other name is still a devil.
I think he said Rose, but it's close enough.
Whatever.
Smelling is sweet.
Yeah. Like you're paraphrasing.
So, as you mentioned, the devil looks,
Very lovely by
some standards, lovely. And I'm used to looking over here at somebody who, a lot of times, wearing a hoodie. A lot of times look like she maybe slept in a car, whatever.
A lot of times,
and I think
a lot of times you never see her because she's playing Candy Crush.
Candy Crush, whatever.
Oh my gosh!
We need a makeup person to take care of the devil before the show, so she creates a more pleasant environment. And if she felt prettier, she would act prettier, Timmy.
Colonel, we're not.
What are we going to do with you?
Huh?
What are we going to do with you?
The colonel just needs a little bit of hair gel.
He wants a makeup artist. He wants a green room, and he wants a makeup artist. As I told you before, we're a podcast. We're not on the Periscope. We're not on the YouTube. We're not on the Netflix.
You don't get it. The colonel walked down the street. I had people approach me every single day. Oh, colonel. And a lot of times my hair a mess.
That's not true.
My hair a mess. I got my nose is all shiny.
You don't have that much hair.
You have image issues. You do have image issues.
Yeah, I got to keep up. I got an image to keep up. So that's my demands. Personal assistant. I prefer to Monica Lewinsky. If I can't get her, I'll take pretty much anybody.
If you can get a volunteer,
I don't care if it's you got a criminal background. Doesn't matter to me.
You can contact University of Cincinnati, Xavier University. If you can convince the director of their communication department to give you an intern,
well, okay. If we ain't going to get the makeup artist, can we at least tell the devil to put some makeup on and dress up on today's podcast?
No.
So your demands are falling on deaf ears. Carol.
No,
let me put it this way. If Bill Gates tomorrow decides he loves our podcast and he just wants to throw
$700 million
away.
I think he would. Bill Gates.
And we have money stacked up in this studio and we trip over it.
He still wouldn't get a PA.
You still wouldn't get a personal assistant.
All right, fine.
Maybe, perhaps you should. I know you want a makeup artist. I know you like feeling pretty.
Mail order bride.
Yeah, that's the way to go. The real doll.
The colonel already on the list for a mail order bride.
I'm just saying that could be your PA.
Well, that's true. Okay, and let's give our shout outs to we. As I said, I have not heard from lovely Lady Beverly, so I'm assuming she's recovering.
Yeah, get well soon, Beverly.
Colleen has been telling me about the cool places in Michigan that I need to visit. So
good. Thing you go up there every year.
I call her Colleen every time. It's Celine.
Celine. Correct.
She's going to come down here. And Celine, if you come down here to thump me in the head for that, would you be my personal assistant for just a short period of time?
Celine, no. You cannot give me a sandwich.
You got any crackers, devil? Just anything around here?
Probably sometimes.
Hi to Celine and Canute over in Norway.
Canute, yeah. Teach me how to fish in harpoon or something, Canute. I ain't eat nothing all day.
We've got two listeners that listen to us from Sweden, and we would love for them to contact us through our Facebook page, History Dweebs, to find out about more about them, and we'll give them a shout out.
But I wonder if they could get us a discount on the Swedish fish. The Colonel loves Swedish fish.
They
get
beautiful women in Sweden, though. Jeez. Okay, who
isn't
else?
Isn't Sweden where porn originated?
I think so. That's that Swedish erotica.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so did we miss anyone? Mom.
Your mother.
My mom.
Well, of course, Dottie. And Dottie, I appreciate you sticking up for the colonel when your son was so cruelly bullying him about his socks.
You had Mickey Mouse socks on. You're a grown man,
you're
going
to be on to catch a predator.
It's creepy.
There were,
look at my Mickey Mouse socks, little girl. Come get into my van.
See?
Let me show you my underoos.
No matter how you dress her up, she's still the devil. Still the devil.
Okay.
Timmy said underoos.
Okay, so also, Casey, we miss him. Come back. Brittany, we are looking forward to her next appearance on the show. So if we missed anybody, I'm sorry, but thank you all for listening. Send us an email through History Dweebs Facebook page, and we'll make sure to give you a shout out next time. Okay, let's move on to our topic because it's a creepy topic and it's a long topic. We apologize if this runs a little longer than our normal podcast, but what the heck, it's Halloween. So our topic for today is the Texarkana Moonlight Murders, which occurred in the spring of 1946 in Texarkana, Arkansas. And which is a small town in southwest or southeast.
It's in
Miller County, Arkansas.
Yeah, but I mean in Arkansas for our listeners. We have a lot of listeners.
It's over by Texas.
A lot of our listeners in the UK. We have more and more listeners in the UK.
It's by the Panhandle region.
Yeah.
Of
so. So anyway, this is a small town, and this was 1946. And between the months of late February and May of 1946.
Have you ever seen our country?
Five people were killed and three were wounded through these attacks on this small little town. These crimes have never been solved. So, like I said, potentially the murderer is still at large, even though he or she would be quite long in the tooth at this point.
Would be elderly.
But anyway. And it was a kind of a creepy scenario. At dusk, the city would kind of start to panic because these murders took place at night. Usually, they took place at lovers' lanes or roads where teenagers or young people would go to make out.
And fornicate.
Maybe not fornicate. We don't know. I mean, you know, I'm pro fornication myself, but there some of our listeners may be anti fornication. Colonel is anti fornication.
Some of them just got to the foreign part and then they caught a bullet.
Yeah, they didn't get very far in their escapades. So anyway, so people freaked out. They were keeping their lights on 24 hours a day. Police were patrolling the streets at all hours. Gun shops were, running out of guns, running out of ammunition because people were buying them up because they were freaking out over these murders. And it only lasted 2.5 months, and then all of a sudden, it stopped. So, and as I said, the murders remained unsolved to this day. And the attacks served partially as a basis for the 1976 motion picture, The Town That Dreaded Sundown. And, you know, we talked last time about the Salem witch trials and how mass hysteria can really, make people do some strange things.
You know what else can make people do strange things?
Hunger.
Low blood sugar and hunger.
But in this case, there was certainly reason to be concerned. And Brandy's going to tell us about the murders.
So the first attack happened on February 22nd of 1946 to Jimmy Hollis and Mary Jean Larry. It was a late Friday night, about 11:55, and Jimmy Hollis, age 25, and his girlfriend, Mary Jean Ann. Is it Jean Ann or Jean?
Mary Jean, I think.
Mary Jean. She was 19. They were attacked while parked on a secluded road known as the Lover's Lane. They arrived, the couple got there about 11:45, and after about 10 minutes of fornicating...
We don't know.
They're fornicators.
They were not fornicating. They were making out.
They're fornicators.
Little French kissing, little petting, heavy petting.
A little something. They're fornicators. A man walked up to the driver's side door, flashed a flashlight in Hollis's face, and blinded him. Hollis wasn't sure if it was a prank or if he'd been mistaken for somebody else, so he told the man, you got me mixed up with somebody else. You got the wrong guy. The man at the door held up a pistol and told him something like, I don't want to kill you, fella. So what do I say? And ordered them to get out of the car. They both got out through the driver's side door, and the man told Hollis to take off his fucking britches.
Take off those fucking britches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, snitches get britches.
Yeah, they do.
Mary Jean pleaded with Hollis to just take the pants off, which I'm sure they were halfway off anyway.
We don't know that.
Take them off, believing that if he did, he wouldn't be hurt.
Yeah, see, if anyone ever tells you to take your pants off or
you're going to come at you.
Yeah. It's not going to end well.
Ain't nobody that's seen Deliverance. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
So Hollis took off his pants, but was struck twice in the head with a heavy, blunt object. Mary Jean explained in an interview later that the noise was so loud she thought he'd been shot, but learned later it was the sound of his skull cracking.
So he hits him with something blunt, gun or a pipe or something.
Mary Jean then picked up Hollis's pants, pulled out his wallet, and told the assailant he doesn't have any money, which is why they were on Lover's Lane and not at the movies.
So he could have been at a drive-in or something.
Whatever.
Cheap bastard.
Fornicator. He didn't have any money. I ran out of gas. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so the assailant told her that she was lying and that she had a purse.
So she assumed she was being robbed.
Mary Jean told him she didn't have a purse and he knocked her to the ground. She said it felt like
he pimp slapped her.
It looks that way.
She was holding out on him and he gave her the pimp.
You don't hold out.
No.
That's, So
bitches
she felt
be
like,
testifying.
Yes. So she said she felt like she'd been hit with an iron pipe. And the assailant ordered her to get up, and when she did, he told her to run. As she ran toward
good
a ditch.
Good advice.
Yeah, well, as she ran towards a ditch, the assailant told her not to go that way, but to run up the road. So now he's Garmin. Now he's Magellan, giving directions all over the place. Yeah.
Well, at least he's directing her, giving her some direction.
So she stated that while she was running, she heard Hollis groaning and that the man continued to beat and stomp him.
See, that's why you always travel in pairs, because when the other person is getting beat up, you can get away.
Right. Now, she was having trouble running in her high heels.
Why don't you ditch the heels?
I read that. Yeah.
That's before all the horror movies were around.
Oh, maybe. But I thought, well, why don't you just kick your shoes off and run?
She's having trouble running in her high heels when the assailant ran after her. She saw an older car parked further up the street facing their vehicle, and she quickly looked inside to see if anyone could help her. But after seeing no one, she began to run and was overtaken by the attacker.
I think she didn't want to get a run in her hose.
Mm-hmm. Well, the man asked her why she was running.
He seems a bit confused.
Yeah. She reminded him that he had told her to run.
Oh, you told me to run.
And he called her a liar. Lies.
He called her out.
Do you have the memo? Do you have the email that I said run?
Yeah, so he catches up with her.
He catches up with her, calls her a liar, knocks her to the ground, and then sexually assaults her.
Yeah, and that's not a good... that's kind of gross.
Mary Jean stated he didn't rape her, but abused her terribly. Later reports indicated that the assailant sexually assaulted her with the barrel of his gun. She managed to get up and told the assailant, go ahead and kill me.
She told the assailant, go ahead
and kill me? Yeah, she got a little defiant. According to her, she got defiant because she was like, I don't want that again. I don't want that...
Yeah.
I don't want that to happen again, so just go ahead and take
it. It was
me
only
out.
Like a 38.
I don't know.
Well,
it wasn't like you had a 44.
But we're not joking about that.
No.
Don't be gross. Don't be gross.
You know what?
Well, it's
the
not
worst
like
part.
He had a, you know, she bazooka was, either, but still, it doesn't matter.
He violated her.
Those things are not supposed to go there.
Well, if he was a responsible gun owner, you had it oiled up beforehand.
Okay.
That's all I'm
You're
saying.
Done talking now. She told him to go ahead and kill her. She ran. She took off running again. She ran a half mile, believing that she was being chased. She got to a residence where she screamed for help and banged on the front door. Thank you. A car passed. No. A car passed and didn't stop when she called and ran after it. She ran to the back of the house and woke up the owners, who then notified authorities. Bowie County Sheriff W.H. Bill Presley and three other officers arrived at the scene, but the attacker had already driven off. They found Hollis's pants 100 yards away from the attack.
Poor Hollis. He's getting his ass kicked and he's losing his pants.
Well, I wonder if he got...
No, don't go there.
Both victims actually survived the attack. Mary Jean was taken to the hospital for minor cuts and received stitches for her head wounds, and then all the psychological help she was going to need later.
And did the guy get his britches back?
Hollis was hospitalized for several days with 3 skull fractures. Police did not seem to believe their story. Police did not seem to believe their story and seemed convinced that the couple knew their assailant. Mary Jean described him as a man with a white mask over his head. I hate those things. With cutout places for his eyes and mouth.
Yeah, the way I saw it described was like a burlap sack.
Creepy.
Yeah.
Because Hollis was blinded by the flashlight before being beaten, he didn't notice a mask.
Yeah, he just got his head beat in. Mm-hmm.
He believed,
hard to give you a description.
Hollis believed he was a dark-tanned white man. Mary Jean believed he was a light-skinned African-American because of the way he pronounced the curse words he growled.
That's a little racist.
They both agreed that he was about 6 foot tall. The second attack occurred about a month later on March 23rd of 1946. The victims were Richard Griffin, 29, and Polly Ann Moore, 17. Dirty.
Yeah, so it's just to kind of... clarify. So the police at this point, they don't believe that
they were attacked by an unknown assailant. They
like
think they knew him.
Like it was a jealous boyfriend or somebody or something like that.
They found, their bodies were found on Sunday, March 24th of 1946.
Yeah, how old was the guy and how old was the girl?
29 and 17.
Yeah. That's kind of frowned upon now.
Fornicating. Both had been shot in the back of the head with a .32 revolver. Bloodstains on the ground indicated they'd been killed outside the car and then put back in it.
That's a lot of trouble going.
That is a lot. That's weird and gross.
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Richard Griffiths was found between the front seats on his knees with his head resting on his crossed hands, and his pockets were turned inside out. Miss Moore was found sprawled face down in the back seat. Really? Griffin had been shot twice while still in the car, and both had been shot once in the back of the head and were fully clothed. Moore's purse was beside her in the back seat and contained a photo of her that was used in the following morning's paper. The motorists contacted the city police, who then contacted Bowie County Sheriff Presley. According to a police report written by Arkansas State Trooper Max Tackett, that's an awesome name, one of the lead investigators of the Phantom case, Moore was killed on a blanket in front of the vehicle before being placed back inside. In a mix-up, Moore's body was picked up before an examination could determine if she'd been sexually assaulted.
So some little sloppy police work there.
The couple were last seen having dinner with Griffin's sister and her boyfriend at about 10 p.m. Saturday night in a nearby cafe. Sheriff Presley, leader of the investigation, was with his old friend, Texas City Police Jack N. Runnels, when the call came in and they sped to the scene. They immediately launched a citywide investigation, along with the Texas and Arkansas City Police, the Department of Public Safety, Miller and Cass County Sheriff's Departments, and the FBI. No money was found on Griffin, nor was any found in Moore's purse. Family members claimed that they did not carry much money with them. And Monday morning, they called in Walker, Texas Rangers.
Yes, they called in the Texas Rangers, and then FBI got involved. It was a big deal. And now they're starting to take it seriously.
Yes. Texas Ranger. Yeah, but who knows if they've connected them or not. Let's see here. Texas Ranger Jimmy Greer arrived in Texarkana Monday night. Now, it should be said, too, that Texarkana is in both Arkansas and Texas.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. And who
same
do they
way
pay
St. Louis does.
Well, there's East St. Louis.
Well, no,
East St. Louis.
Harrison, Ohio, right where we at. Part of it's in Indiana, part of it's in Ohio.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tim.
I just don't like it.
Okay. It's yeah, yeah. Let's see. He and the rest of the investigators combed for more clues on Tuesday. They concluded the only apparent motive was robbery. The investigators continued to work overtime on the crime the papers were calling baffling. The lack of definite clues hampered their investigation. The bloody sand that was found seven steps in front of the car was sent to laboratories of the State Department of Public Safety in Austin, Texas, along with the blood-soaked clothing of the victims to determine if the blood belonged to one of the victims or a third party. By Thursday, March 28th, the investigators were growing weary after five consecutive days of questioning about 200 suspects.
Yeah, they pull. I mean, Texarkana is not that big of a town now. And, of course, this is more, like you said, it's like a tri-state area.
Yeah.
But, you know, they start pulling everyone in and questioning everyone on this thing.
They chased over 100 false leads and tips and started going back over the meager clues. On Saturday night, April 13th, Betty Jo Booker, age 15, was playing her alto saxophone in her regular weekly gig with her band. I don't know what... she was at the VFW.
It was Betty Jo and the Bookers, I believe.
It wasn't. It was the
she was a sax
Rhythmaires.
Hmm?
The Rhythmaires.
Catchy name.
Yeah.
Love their music.
She was the precursor to Booker T.
Oh, okay. Her friend, Paul Martin, age 16, picked her up to give her a ride after
now
the
Now, that's more
age
appropriate.
It really is.
Yeah.
He had been with her earlier that day before the dance and was to take her to a slumber party across town. Booker's classmate said that earlier that day she told him she did not want to go out with Paul but felt obligated since he was an old friend.
How old a friend could he be if he was 16?
Right. Booker and Martin were killed early Sunday, April 14th. Paul Martin's body was found at about 6:30 a.m. by a local resident. Betty Jo Booker's body was not found until approximately 11:30 a.m., almost 2 miles away from Martin's body. Her body was lying on its back, fully clothed, with the right hand in the pocket of a buttoned overcoat. Booker had been shot twice, once through the left fifth rib from the front and once through the left cheek by the nose. The weapon used was the same as in the first double murder, a .32 automatic Colt pistol. The reports in the following day's paper said the bodies were not abused, but later reports claimed that Booker had been raped.
Yeah, it sounded like they might have not wanted to release that just for her, you know.
Well,
we're talking
modesty.
About,
and,
yeah, this
yeah.
is 1940s.
Keeping her
yeah.
reputation unsullied.
Yeah, yeah.
These were not fornicators.
No, they were young kids. And so now we're up to six victims of four murders, right?
Mm-hmm. Martin's 1946 Ford Club Coupe was found about a mile and a half away from Martin's body. It was parked with the keys still in the ignition. Authorities weren't sure who was shot first, but appeared both put up quite a struggle.
Good for them.
A lot of time and energy went into finding Betty Booker's saxophone. The police felt that the killer would try to sell it.
Yeah, they seemed to, like, really think that that was the key to solving this whole thing, that the killer...
They might not have been far off. I mean, it might have been worth some money.
Maybe, but they seemed to get distracted by it.
Well, it was to no avail. They never found it. Or they didn't find it.
They didn't find it right away.
Over 6 months later, on the morning of October 24th, P.V. Ward and J.F. McNaif, while repairing a fence, discovered Booker's missing saxophone still in its black leather case. It was located in the underbrush across Morris Lane, about 140 steps east from where the body was found. The investigation continued at a feverish pace. So, just TV time out here.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was by the body in some underbrush.
Yeah, it wasn't very far away. It was like 140
feet. Well, then they didn't look very hard, did they?
Well, but then there's some... There was speculation, though, that the killer may have come back and just got rid of it, put it there. I don't see going back to the...
No.
I mean, you can dump a saxophone anywhere.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
Suspects were consistently brought in throughout the day by city police. Many friends of the victims, schoolmates, and others went to the Bowie County Sheriff's Office to lend information. The community became even more panicked. Police were getting hundreds of leads, but most of them went nowhere. Rewards were offered, which led to even more dead ends. Teenagers started to park on Lover's Lanes in an effort to bait the killer. Because that's
that
what teenagers do.
Or what? That would be stupid. And I know the police, you know, asked them not to do that. But, yeah, teenagers would go out and park in hopes of trying to catch the phantom killer.
So the fourth attack occurred on May 3rd, 1946, on Virgil and Katie Starks.
And this one's a little bit different.
Yeah. Virgil was 37, and his wife, Kate, 36, owned a modest home about 10 miles outside of Texarkana. On Friday, May 3rd, sometime before 9 p.m., Virgil turned on his favorite weekly radio show, and his wife, Katie, gave him a heating pad for his sore back.
You ever use a heating pad, Colonel?
Colonel used a heating pad all the time, Timmy.
For your back, or?
When I get a grab of my gleep, my rheumatism flare up,
yeah.
I use a heating pad.
Okay.
I got some liniment I put on it, too.
Do you?
I
bet that smells good.
You know what if I had some liniment right now, you know what I'd do? I'd eat it because I didn't have no damn lunch.
If you had an assistant, they would bring you some liniment.
If I had an assistant, you know what? If I had a makeup person, I could just say, hey, could you run to the vending machine for me?
Yeah.
But right now, I'm on a podcast. We're shooting live.
You're hungry.
I can't leave. I'm hungry.
Brandy won't stop talking.
I'm wrapping stuff around my belly here so you don't hear a growl.
Continue with the murders.
Continue on, devil. It's a fascinating narrative you've given us here. It is quite these murders are creepy.
There's
some creepy ass stuff here.
Yeah, happened in a big city, it would be creepy. But happening in a small town where everyone knows each other.
Yeah. So Virgil was hanging out in his armchair in the sitting room, which was just off the kitchen in the bedroom. Katie was in her bedroom, lying in bed in her nightgown, when she heard something from the backyard and asked Virgil to turn down the radio. Seconds later, while Virgil was reading the May 3rd edition of the Texarkana Gazette, two shots were fired in the back of his head from a closed double window. Katie didn't hear the shots.
No, she could hear every other noise. And, you know, if the man was up in the middle of the night just clicking the remote on the TV,
he was on the radio.
Turn that down, Henry, turn that down. I'm trying to sleep.
Virgil was his name.
But the cranky-ass woman didn't hear the gunshots.
So she did hear what sounded like the breaking of glass. She thought Virgil had dropped something and went to see what happened, and as she entered the doorway to the living room, she saw Virgil stand up and then suddenly slump back in his chair. She saw blood, then ran to him and lifted up his head. When she realized he was dead, she ran to the phone to call police. She rang the wall crank phone two times before being shot twice in the face from the same window. One bullet entered her right cheek and exited through her left ear. What is wrong with you?
Why the hell didn't she just run out the house?
Well, she didn't know where it came from.
She's trying to get Sarah out.
Trying to get Ethel on the phone. Stop it.
It wasn't a good decision. You're right.
No.
None of these people watch any monster movies.
They don't.
Maybe not back then.
Somebody just shot my husband in the head through the window two times. Let me just take around because I'm sure they're bolting off down the road.
Why didn't she just snap a picture with her phone? Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to tell. You're panicking. You don't know what to do. You first thing.
That's a Darwin Award right there, Timmy. That's Darwinism at work. You're going to hang around.
She's a badass. So
she's in the killing zone. Yeah. She's in the killing zone. And then she just say, oh, you know what? I'm going to make a phone call.
I'm sure she was ordering a pizza.
How your cousin doing? Yeah. Could you
ring the sheriff?
To the sheriff?
Well, yeah.
Virgil's been shot in the head twice.
Why don't you let me finish this?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so the one bullet entered her right cheek and exited behind her left ear. So that went through.
I'm sure she regrets that decision, Colonel.
Right. The other went in her lower jaw just between the lip, breaking it and splintering out several teeth. Before lodging under her tongue.
So this guy is shooting from outside the home.
Right.
Through the window. Yeah.
She dropped to her knees but managed to get to her feet. She ran to get the pistol from the living room. Didn't do that anyway. She should have done that first, but she was blinded by her own blood. She heard the killer tearing loose the rusted screen wire on the back porch.
Well, that's got to be creepy.
Yeah. Miss Stark thought she was going to be killed, so she stumbled toward her bedroom near the front of the house to leave a note.
What?
For who? I have to question. She might be a badass, but I really have to question what's going on here. We're going to leave a note? Like, I don't... Okay.
Yeah, why don't she just get a typewriter out and...
Meanwhile...
Well, could you give me a minute, Mr. Murderer? I just trying to leave a note.
I want to knit a sweater.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Meanwhile, the killer...
I got a casserole in.
The killer ran to the back of the house and was making his way up the steps into the side screen porch through the back screen door. Okay. I'm having a hard time visualizing this.
No, he's coming in one.
And she's headed the other way.
Yeah, so she runs up.
It's about time she headed the fuck up out of Dodge. From the killer.
Yeah.
So she heard the killer coming through the kitchen window, so she turned and ran the other way outside the house, leaving a trail of blood. Barefoot and still in her nightgown, which was soaked in her blood, she ran across the street to her sister and brother-in-law's house. Since no one was home, she ran 50 yards more to A.V. Prater's house. Prater answered her call for help. She gasped, "Virgil's dead," then collapsed. Prater shot a rifle in the air to summon another neighbor. That's how you get some shit. That's how you get a posse together right there.
That is how you get falsely arrested for murder when you do shit like that.
So there's that too, but that's how you get a posse together. You send up a shot.
Well, first of all, there have already been about four shots.
Yeah, I know. Why wasn't the neighbor summoning
in? Yeah, but you know what, though?
Oh, that was a .32, honey. That don't mean anything.
It reminds me of the nights that the lights went out with Georgia, where the guy fires a shot to flag him down.
Yeah.
He ends up getting arrested. Just saying. Vicki Lawrence... I'm just saying.
Fire the shot, just to flag him down.
Yeah,
I know. I'm familiar with the song.
Big belly sheriff.
He grabbed his gun.
Said, "Why'd you do it?"
Yeah.
Okay. So, but you guys, I mean, this is country. I mean,
I know. I'm just saying, there's already been four shots.
I know.
But, you know.
But she survived.
Thank God.
There were three clues found at the scene. The first was the caliber of bullets. The second was a flashlight found in the hedge underneath the window that Stark was shot from.
Yeah, they had. If you go online, you can see the flashlight. You can.
The last clue was of bloody prints around the house, shoe prints on the kitchen floor, and smudged fingerprints in other places. Sheriff Davis stated that although this murder could not be directly linked to the Phantom because the caliber was a .22, it was possible that the killer was one and the same man.
I have questions about this one, only because the M.O. is completely different.
Yeah.
I mean, he shot him from outside their house. He wasn't alone in park with the kids. He didn't sexually assault no one. I have questions about this one, but, you know.
Yeah.
It may or may not be related.
Doesn't matter. She's still badass.
I think it was a crime of opportunity.
Maybe even murder or attempted suicide.
Yeah, but you know what? That's like, you know, the Night Stalker, which we haven't talked about, but... I mean, his was just random.
Yeah, wherever you... Yeah.
So random.
I think sometimes they're random just to
they're
throw
scarier.
Off. Yeah, they're just throwing off. They're just doing
well, and it could be, too.
Throw off the 30s.
I mean, when you think about it, he's shot four people now with the .32.
Mm-hmm.
All this going on in town, he don't want to be the guy walking into the hunting store saying, "Give me some .32 rounds."
I need some rounds.
We'll get in some theories later where that might come into the caliber of the gun comes into play. But
after the first double murder, parents were warning their children about being out late. The second double murder shocked the city and curfews were set for businesses. The height of the town's hysteria snowballed after the murder of Virgil Starks.
Man, can you imagine? And living in a small town, you got... 8 people attacked, 5 are dead within, you know, 6 weeks.
The Texarkana Gazette stated on Sunday, May 5th, that the killer might strike again at any moment, at any place, anyone.
That's a little hyperbole for the newspaper. Well, I mean, that's almost encouraging.
Because he almost always did it at night. So it really wouldn't be any place, any time.
But I mean, he was switching up his M.O.
Yeah, but it was always at night.
Yeah, so far.
Because those white masks that you wear over your head, they're not nearly as scary in the daytime.
No, they're pretty scary. So before, if any of you ever lived in the country or whatever, you left your doors unlocked and whatever. But residents started locking their doors, pulling down shades, blocking windows, and arming themselves.
Good plan.
Some people would nail sheets over their windows or nail the windows down. Some used screen door braces as window guards.
Yeah, I see where people kept their lights on during the day so they could see shadows. People, the whole town's on edge.
The day after the Starks' death, several residents bought firearms and locks, sold out of locks, guns, ammunition, window shades, and Venetian blinds.
Mouse traps.
Other items that sold well included window sash locks, screen door hooks, night latches, and other protective devices. Screen door hooks, because you don't get through one of those.
No.
So the hardware salesman had a motive.
I'll tell you what we did when I was a kid now, and this would have been the foolproof plan. Mm-hmm. This is a true story. Now, even though the colonel was a man of means and, you know, fame and wealth and luxury,
obviously.
I came from very humble beginnings.
But you're a kept man now.
Very, very humble beginnings. And we lived in a very, very poor part of town.
Your dead mother.
I lived in a very poor part of town. My mama was trying to raise 3 children by herself. And we lived in a housing project. Mm-hmm. I'm not ashamed of it. And, of course...
You live in a hood.
We couldn't... Yeah, we did. We could not afford a fancy alarm system. And it's a true story. We had mini blinds, the old aluminum mini blinds. Mm-hmm. And what we would do was at night, you would take about 5 soda cans or Pabst Blue Ribbon cans mm-hmm. or straws or whatever, mm-hmm. and you set them on a window ledge. And that way, when somebody tried to come in the window, when they moved the Venetian blinds, that's what we used to call them, not mini blinds, Venetian blinds.
Because you're European that way.
Yeah. We still had class. We weren't animals.
We weren't
gauche, for God's sake.
Sorry, Colonel. I would never think
when you hit
gauche.
The Venetian blinds, it would knock the cans off, and of course nobody could afford no tile, so you had tile floors. So when somebody tried to sneak into your house, it knocked all the beer cans onto the floor.
Oh. And also doubled as a doorbell.
That was the colonel's alarm system. That's a true story. I ain't making that up.
I don't think we wouldn't think he would make anything like that up. Because it sure wasn't funny.
No, I'm just saying. And the reason I said mousetrap is that occasionally you would put mousetraps, you know, you'd load mousetraps up on the windowsill too. That way if somebody reached for something, the things would snap and pop off. And it was a tough life.
Well, what if they come through the door? You got everyone coming through your window.
Well, you lock the damn door. People in the summertime.
Don't you lock your windows?
You had a latch.
We didn't have no air conditioning, Timmy. In the summertime, it was hot. You had to leave the damn windows open.
I'm sorry. I forgot. It was like raisin in the sun. Go ahead, Mandy.
So throughout the investigation of the Phantom Killers, almost 400 suspects were arrested and eventually released. They just pulled in everyone.
Yeah, they were. And a lot of the leads, they put out a... an award, you know, reward, and it kept adding to it, and that kind of caused a problem because they were bringing more and more people in with false leads.
Right.
And it was, you know, there was...
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Running in circles.
So the victims of the first attack, Jimmy Hollis and Mary Jean Leary, were the only victims to actually give a description of their attacker. Again, they described him as being 6 foot tall with a white mask over his face with the holes cut out for his eyes and his mouth.
Yeah, the guy said he was a tan white guy. She said he's a black guy.
Do you want to do this?
I'm just saying that there's no good description of the guy.
No, there's not. They can't decide if he's white or black or whatever.
Right.
So, Katie Starks said she never saw her assailant.
Because she had blood in her eyes.
She had blood everywhere.
And she, yeah. How does she even give a statement? This what I, you can shoot a woman in the mouth and she's still tall. I mean, you can't shut some women up even if you shoot them in the mouth.
I don't know. She went through a pretty traumatic experience.
Since Hollis and Larry were the only survivors to give a description, it cannot be known if the killer wore a mask during the other attacks. The modus operandi established for the killer was that he attacked young couples in lonely or private areas just outside city limits using a gun, using a .32 caliber gun. Even though the caliber used at the Starks murder was a .22, it was first believed by the majority of lawmen that it was used by the Phantom.
Well, I guess part of it is such a small town, and they probably don't have a lot of crime, so when there's any type of murder,
right,
and they're all, you know, in that area, it's probably feel that it's connected.
And if you look at the geography of the place, you'd be saying it's a small town. Now, the colonel in his research
probably
on
spread
this,
out.
No, it's very condensed.
Did you go on Google Maps?
It's rural.
Huh? Did you go on Google Maps?
You can actually Street Google view. Map it right now and see where the murder sites were.
Mm-hmm.
You can get on the internet, get the GPS coordinates, put them in Google, and you can see sites of where it's just a field and not much.
Yeah, they actually, I know a few years ago, they were, on Halloween, they played the movie, The Town That Dreaded Sundown.
They do every year.
Yeah.
Every year.
Yeah.
Well, that's creepy. Sucky.
Yeah.
They're doing a remake of The Town That Dreaded Sundown.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Good. He always attacked on the weekend, and he usually attacked 3 weeks apart, and it was always late at night.
I bet he was a mailman, because he probably worked 9 to 5.
Nothing but business.
Nothing but business from 9 to 5, y'all.
What a way to make a living.
In the Hollis and Larry case, there were no suspects apprehended. In the Griffin and Moore case, over 200 people were questioned, and about the same number of false tips and leads were checked. 3 suspects were taken into custody for bloody clothing, 2 of which were released after officers received satisfying explanations.
Why do you have bloody clothes? I mean, I guess
if they're hunting or,
yeah,
I mean, you know,
people
whatever.
People had axes in their house all the time. Remember, people had axes. When you have axes, you're going to have axe dents.
Yeah,
and
I guess.
You didn't have blood.
That was bad.
I guess. I'm just saying that.
That was a play on words.
I'm just saying that it seems like, you know, to have bloody clothing around, you know, you reek of suspicion to me.
The remaining suspect was held in Vernon, Texas for further investigation, but was later freed of suspicion. In the Martin and Booker case, a taxi driver quickly became the main suspect because the cab had been seen in the vicinity of the crime scene that morning. But the driver was soon washed out as the investigations continue. And I bet he was a foreigner.
Was this an Uber driver?
No,
not an Uber driver.
Say that.
I bet it was. Small town. You always suspect the foreigner.
Oh, yeah.
He's probably French.
You can't trust a Frenchman.
And he has a little beret.
But you know what? Frenchmen never shoot.
I don't think.
If it would have been a Frenchman, you know what? He'd have pulled that gun and said, I surrender, and ran away.
And you hit him with a sword.
Yeah, you know that the French went through hell of World War I. They just surrendered in World War II. They passed on that one.
It's not my fault.
They were a little tired.
Friends, acquaintances, and several suspects were questioned in 3 rooms of the Bowie County building by officers who worked in 24-hour relays. Suspects were brought in from within a 100-mile radius, both male and female, and white and black. Officers received a lead from Jerry Atkins, Booker's band leader, who stated that Betty had a saxophone with her. Since no saxophone was found, officers hoped it would lead them to a suspect.
Yeah, they were hung up on that saxophone. Here's the thing that I want. I don't... Yeah, never mind. Go ahead. Go on.
So are you telling me that my hero, Clarence Clemens, could have been a murderer?
Yes.
No, because Clarence was 6'4".
Okay. On Saturday, April 24th, a man was arrested in Corpus Christi for trying to sell a saxophone to a music store. On Thursday, April 25th, since we're not going chronologically, on Thursday, April 25th, the 30-year-old... What?
Nothing. Continue.
30-year-old man walked into a music store without an instrument and asked the salesperson if they wanted to buy an alto Bundy saxophone, like Ted Bundy.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that was a coincidence?
I think not.
Okay. So what happened when he went in?
The girl said he would need to speak to her manager. And the man replied, "What do you have to talk to him about for? You work here, don't you?"
Well, he had a good question. That's a good question.
The girl claimed the man seemed nervous. Well, he should have. Once the manager was summoned, the man fled, and the store contacted police. The man was arrested 2 days later at a waterfront hotel after purchasing a .45 revolver from a pawn shop. On Tuesday, April 30th, the sales girl identified him as the same man who tried selling the saxophone. Although no saxophone was found in his possession, the police found a bag of bloody clothing in his hotel room.
Okay, so that's pretty suspicious. He's selling a saxophone similar to the kind that Betty, Betty Booker?
Yeah.
Had, and he seems a little nervous, a little apprehensive, runs out of the store when the clerk goes to get her manager, and he's got bloody clothes in his hotel.
The guy claimed that the blood was from a cut he received on his forehead in a bar fight. After questioning, the man was released as his story checked out. In the Starks case, there were several people who were found in the vicinity of the home who were stopped and questioned. 12 were detained, but 9 were soon released. The other 3 were kept for further questioning. Eventually, all detainees were released.
Yeah, so they're running to dead ends, but we do have some suspects.
Well, some suspects, and it comes from Max Hawk Tackett. Because anybody named Max Tackett had
to be a
hawk.
Is that not a badass name?
Yeah. It is. He was the lead investigator. One of the lead investigators. They had some pretty famous people. They had some of the Texas. We talked about the Texas
Walker.
Yeah,
Texas Ranger.
It wasn't Walker.
Chuck Norris was there.
No. Chuck Norris was there.
He'd have found him, actually, if he had been. So.
Now, at this time, Max Tackett is a 33-year-old rookie police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd realized that this car had been stolen on the night of the murders. And a previously stolen car had been found abandoned. Okay. So somebody did a swap out on stolen cars on the night of the murders.
Okay.
So Tackett found a car that had been reported stolen in a parking lot. He staked out the car until someone came for it.
Badass.
So he kind of, he's trying to make connection between the stolen car and the murder.
Yeah.
Okay. So someone came for it.
21-year-old woman.
Woman.
Yeah. Tackett, he wrestled her to the ground.
Well, I'm sure she needed that.
Slapped her around a little bit, tasered her.
Obviously.
This is in Arkansas, not in Ferguson, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is where it starts.
All right.
Put those little zip tie things
on.
All
right, come on, go on.
Anyway, and said, "Who the hell are you, woman?" So she said who she was, and she said her husband had stolen the car, and he was in Texas trying to sell another stolen car.
He's a busy man.
He was a serial car thief.
A serial stealer.
Yeah, so Tackett's going to find this guy. So anyway, there's a... Homer Carter, the chief of police of Atlanta, told Hackett that a man tried selling a stolen car to one of his citizens. So Tackett finds the citizen, says, "Hey, would you recognize the guy?" The guy said, "No, I'd never recognize him." Tackett looks at the guy, realizes that he looks like Yosemite Sam, got these big cowboy hats and boots and stuff on, say, "You know what? You wouldn't recognize him, but he would recognize you." Think about that.
Okay, so the witness would not recognize the car thief.
Right.
But he thought if he took the witnesses around town he's dressed in his
Because Max is a smart guy.
In police uniform, that would somehow, the killer would see him.
It would make the guy show himself.
Yeah, he would be rattled.
Yeah. So, which is exactly what they did. On a Saturday, Tackett walks around. He gets to this bus station. Mm-hmm. And he sees a man run out the, and he's with the guy, Yosemite Sam. And he sees a guy run out the back of the building.
It worked.
Tackett chased him. Tackled him, caught him on fire. And then
no, he didn't catch him on fire.
I'm sorry, he caught him on a fire escape.
Okay, so let me just so I get this straight.
There it is.
So his theory
caught
was
him on fire. That would have been a better
story. The assailant, the car thief, wouldn't realize that the witness couldn't identify him, and he see him right. with a cop, he would freak out, take off running, which is exactly what this guy did.
Is my blood sugar so low? I'm not explaining this.
Word. No, I'm just, yes. I'm just, you know, I'm just reemphasizing it.
Okay, it's important. Oh, thank you, Melody.
no one knows what that means.
I do though, and it's funny. You
know, Timmy singing his song. That's his little melody he's singing to me. So anyway, this man that had been caught on fire on the fire escape, Yoel Sweeney. He wouldn't talk, but his wife Peggy confessed in great detail that
she confessed.
The
she ratted him out.
Oh, she squealed like a stuck pig.
And they were honeymooners.
The honeymoon was over then.
Snitches get
now
bridges.
By law in 1946, Peggy could not be made to testify against her husband, and because she was considered unreliable at best, Yoel wasn't arrested for murder. But
you know
what?
I don't like his name, Yoel.
That's a stupid name.
Come here, Yoel. And then like five people
It indicates a lack of imagination on his parents' part.
I believe it does. But he got sent to prison for being a habitual offender for car theft. Now, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence against Sweeney here. The car that Peggy Sweeney was arrested for, it was the one reported stolen the night of the Griffin Moore murders.
Okay.
Now, when Tackett caught Sweeney on the fire escape, Sweeney said, "Please don't shoot me." Tackett said, "Well, I ain't going to shoot you for stealing no cars." Sweeney then said, and I keep calling him Sweeney. It's Sweeney, but I like Sweeney better.
That's all right. Just call me Yoel.
Because, no, you know, Sweeney is
like
Irish
Brenner.
Name.
And, all right, go ahead.
Anyway, so he said, "Mister, don't play." This is what Sweeney says, Yoel. "Mister, don't play games with me. You want me for more than stealing cars."
Yeah. He was
confessing before he even knew.
Yeah.
So when Yoel is Yoel Gibbons eating the pine cones, he was named after him.
Okay, go ahead.
When Yoel was in the police car, he asked Tillman Johnson, "Mr. Johnson," he's not a policeman, "Mr. Johnson, what do you think that they'll do for this? Will they give me the chair?" Johnson said, "You won't get much, maybe 5-10 years. You don't get the chair for stealing cars, fool."
Yeah, he was just, you know.
Sweeney then said to Johnson, "Mr. Johnson, you got me for more than stealing cars. We both know this."
He just wants him to, he just wants to be pegged for this.
Yeah, he shouldn't be blaming his wife for running her mouth. He's running his mouth, too.
And then when the lawyer told Peggy that her husband was being held for murder, she said, because they did charge him with, they were holding him for murder, but they had no real proof, so they had to just shoot, get him with the car thefts. So they tell Peggy, "You know, your husband being held for murder here," and she said, "Oh my goodness, how did they find out?"
I think that she helped them find out.
Yeah.
She wasn't the brightest
These were not sharp people. Even the hood is unimaginative.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you cut a burlap sack and cut two holes in it.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah. Although there's some days we do podcasts where without a makeup artist.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, but now here's another thing. Peggy's family and Yoel's brother-in-law, they believed he was a phantom. They thought he was. Now police found a khaki work shirt in Yoel's room with the laundry mark of the word Stark.
Which was the family.
Red under a black light, yeah.
Which was the family, you know.
Which was
the
right.
Black victims, the Starks.
Yeah. And in the front pocket of the work shirt, a slag was found. Slag. You know what slag is, don't you?
Yeah, it's like coal or it's a mineral.
Yeah, and it matched samples found in Virgil Stark's welding shop. Also, Yoel owned a .32 Colt automatic, but had previously sold it at a crap game. So
it's a crap game.
Yeah. And while being accused of murder, Yoel, he remained silent instead of pleading his innocence. Although he pled his guiltiness when the police arrested
several
him.
Several times.
Yeah, but then when he was like, "Oh, I ain't saying a word. You and the coppers never take me alive." So anyway, but they did take him alive. They caught him on fire, but
clearly. They didn't catch him on fire, but he did get put away.
Well, he got put away, and Peggy confessed to her husband's actions, revealing very detailed information, including things the officers already knew and other things that they didn't.
So even information that wasn't available to the general public, she knew.
Yeah, now there's some complications to this whole mess, though.
Okay, give us the counter-argument.
Well, I'm going to give you the counter-argument. His fingerprints didn't match any of the prints at the Booker Martin scene.
I don't think that's important. I think fingerprinting was still not an exact science back in the day. But go ahead. Maybe he wore gloves. Who knows?
Peggy, his wife, she repudiated her confession.
Repudiated. Which mm-hmm. that doesn't mean anything. Why would you say it in the first place?
Well, that's true.
Unless you're just mad at your husband, maybe.
You know, he denied being the Phantom and never made a confession. The Texas Rangers and Sheriff Bill Presley, they weren't really convinced he was a Phantom. Officers, including Bowie County Sheriff Presley and Miller County Sheriff Davis, Texas City Chief of Police Reynolds, their officers, and all these people that worked day and nights trying to validate Peggy Swinney's story of her whereabouts. Basically, you had all these officers trying to figure out where in the hell Peggy was on the nights of these murders. They deduced that Peggy was not telling the truth and that on the night of the murder of Booker and Martin, the couple was sleeping in the car under a bridge near San Antonio.
There we go, a bridge.
So yeah. They were miles and miles away. San Antonio is a long way from Texarkana.
It is. And unknown as either a sick prank or a true confession, an anonymous woman contacted her family members of one of the victims, one in 1999, another in 2000, apologizing for what her father had done.
Yeah, I don't put much
credence. Yo Sweeney never did have any kids.
Yeah, I don't put much credence in that. That could be anyone listening to a podcast or reading Wikipedia about this story.
Now, there's some other suspects. There's some other suspects in here, and this is the one I don't like. And I don't like him for one good reason. And his name was Henry Booker Duty Tennyson.
Duty.
Now, that's his nickname, Duty. How you get the name? D-O-O-D-I.
Duty.
Well, now, how do you get the nickname Duty is what I want to know.
Well, I think you can guess.
Yeah. So,
we had a guy like that in high school.
They found him dead in his bed in Fayette, Arkansas.
Okay.
And there was a note there, and it said, "The opening to my box will be found in the following few lines. In a tube of paper is found, rolls on colors, and is dry on sound.
So he's a
murdering poet. The head moves, the tail will turn, and inside the sheet you yearn.
Oh,
geez. I don't like all that. It's like the Joker.
These means a lot when they're together. These clues should lead you to it. See, he wasn't even very good. Then a note was found inside a B&B fountain pen. Poison was found on the cap.
So he had a note leading him to another note?
Right.
Okay.
Now, then the note inside the pen contained clues to the combination of his lockbox. This is like Memento, that movie.
Yeah, I love that movie.
But it's like a scavenger hunt. You think it would be good?
Not in the mood for playing games. The police just broke the damn lock on the box.
There we go.
And inside was a Viewmaster.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah. Several rolls of film, Mexico, and a stack of papers. Under the stack of papers was a note confessing to the Texarkana killings. The note read. Timmy, give me some drama here.
I'm sorry, Colonel. I'm feeling a little under the weather.
The note read.
Dun-dun-dun.
Dun-dun-dun.
Dun-dun-dun. Oh, that's what you want. I thought you wanted me to read it. I don't have it. Dun-dun-dun.
The note read. "This is my last word to you fine people, and y'all fine. I want to thank you for all the trouble that you've gone to send me to college and bring me up. You have really been wonderful. My thanks to Ella Lee, Miss McGee, the owner of the house he was rooming in, for letting me stay with her during my college career, and to Belva Joe, Miss McGee's 12-year-old daughter, for putting up with me the way she did. She had to, I know, but I fell in love with her about a week ago. If she was older, I would have asked her to marry me, but that would be impossible.
Because it's skeevy.
Why did I take my own life? Well, when you committed two double murders, you would too. Yes, I did kill Betty Jo Booker and Paul Martin in the city park that night. And killed Miss Starks and tried to get Mrs. Starks. You wouldn't have guessed it. I did it when Mother was either out.
Ah, there Mother it is.
He's living there in a basement.
There it is.
Yeah.
He's living in a basement.
Oh, at least.
In his mom's basement.
Yeah. And he capitalized Mother. Mm-hmm. That's a psychological clue. So I did it when Mother was out. And I think by out, my guess is Mother was probably a prostitute. Anyway, or asleep.
You never know.
Or asleep.
Yeah.
Or both.
And no one saw me do it. For the guns, I disassembled them, discarded them in different places. When I am found, which has already been done, please give this typewriter to Craig.
Craig.
That's his older brother.
You know what? Hell with you. Craig ain't getting the typewriter.
Craig and Jed.
Yeah, and tell him that I hope his child is a boy. It will help him in his work. Everything can go wherever you think it will do best, except for the Viewmaster, which should go to Velvet Joe. Please take my bankroll and give it to Daddy. I think it should go to him and tell him I don't want the car now because I killed myself.
Yeah, he didn't need the car.
You don't really need it
at
that point.
Seems to me like he would have just taken it. Once you kill somebody, don't you just think he's taking the car?
He's pretty wordy, actually.
He is kind of wordy for
very
a kid.
Very wordy.
Well, goodbye,
bullet
everybody.
Points. All we need is
goodbye, cruel world.
All we need is bullet points.
Yeah.
Right.
Goodbye, everybody. See you sometime if I make the grade, which will be hard for me to make. Now, that's what Duty said.
You know what? I don't buy it.
Duty.
No. He'd written many, many rough drafts of this thing with a pencil and paper before he typed it out. He even created his own newspaper headlines mentioning his body being found. One read, UA student found dead. Another, UA student commits suicide.
Oh, he was helping the press.
He made a sign that read,
Giver.
Do not disturb, death in the making. I mean, so he had a flair for the dramatic.
Yeah.
That's one word for it.
He was attention-seeking, I think.
He wrote his own epitaph.
What
he lies H.B. Tennyson, born February, blah, blah, blah. He committed suicide for the happiness of his family.
Well,
may he rest
might,
in
that
peace.
That part might be true.
Amen.
Amen.
Officers found a bunch more notes. They had no idea in which order he wrote them. And so now fingerprints were taken from him to see if any match could be made on the unclassified prints taken at the scene of the Booker Martin murder.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Bessie Brown, Booker's mother, visited Tennyson's mother to offer sympathy and told her she felt that Tennyson was just batshit crazy, had nothing to do with her daughter's death.
I think that's probably the case.
And then they found another confusing note, which contradicted his other notes, but were unsure when it was written. So they didn't know what order these were written in.
Yeah, he's just...
And it says...
He's quite the writer. Our friend.
Please disregard all of the messages which
Stretch
I have
that.
Written.
Duty was
there are only thoughts
big.
Which I was thinking about as a possible reason. You know why they called him Duty? Because he was a shit for brains was what this boy was.
I think that's
He's a shitty writer, that's for sure.
As I think about it, this is still the note. As I think about it, it is none of these things. They are not the reasons for this incident. There's a much later point to it all. Happiness. Yes, happiness. Well. If I am out of the way, my family can get down to their own lives. Mother will not have to worry about me walking in with her, in her when she's with her Johns and drinking her Ripple.
He did not say that. You're embellishing, Colonel.
I might be embellishing a little bit there.
He's paraphrasing.
I'm paraphrasing, yeah. I'm reading between the lines
All
here,
right,
Timmy.
Well, so do they think this guy was the dude or not?
Well, no.
Okay.
He didn't know anything about guns. He didn't know how to take care of guns. He didn't have access to guns.
He didn't even know how to drive, did he? Did I remember reading that?
Yeah, he didn't know how to drive, so he had to take an Uber cab with the...
No, I think he learned to drive in, like, 1947, so...
Yeah, he was also 6'3" tall and weighed 130 pounds.
Well, that's...
No, they described him as 6 foot tall, stockily built. Now, unless he was, you know...
Yeah, but when you're getting your head pounded in and getting raped with a rifle, you... Sometimes that, you know, eyewitnesses' accounts are usually not very reliable.
They didn't get raped with a rifle. It was a handgun they got raped
with. Well, whatever. I mean, the
No,
the eyewitness,
whatever. There's a big difference between a muzzle
I'm,
a rifle
I'm just saying
the
eyewitness, eyewitness accounts are generally not considered all that reliable.
Now, here's another suspect. And this guy, I don't even know why he was a suspect. He was a German prisoner of war.
Yeah, I don't like this one either.
No, they should have killed him. I mean, why didn't they just kill him in a war?
Well, wait, they don't even know if he was real.
Yeah.
So what happened, this was during the war, of course. This is where right after World War II. There were still some German prisoner of wars in the U.S.
Yeah.
And the you know, again, you talk about the panic and everything. And, you know, having just gone through the Second World War, the fear was this German POW was on the loose, mm-hmm. and he was doing all these dastardly deeds.
That's right. But it turned out, you know what? He wasn't it either.
He didn't even exist, did he?
Well, they don't... there was a guy that existed, but all the things they talked about that he did, there wasn't a guy there at the time.
Right. So there wasn't convincing evidence that he was... Yeah. Anywhere near there.
And then there was a guy who was in the Air Force, a B-24 machine gunner, Ralph Bauman.
Yeah, this is a strange one.
He was in a coma. He might have been
a fan. I just love it when we talk about people in comas.
Yeah.
So he's in a coma.
Yeah, he says, I've been in a coma running from something, maybe murder. I want to clear it up. If I didn't kill 5 people in Texarkana, I want to settle down and be a stuntman in Hollywood. Well, I'm happy.
You weigh your options, yeah. right? Either being a stuntman or a serial killer.
Yeah, well, so he'd gone to the Los Angeles Examiner, told the reporter, and he said, I want to sell you some more murder information. I know who and where the Texarkana killer is.
And he's in L.A., right?
Yeah, Los Angeles. Give me $5 and let me have an hour's head start. And I'll tell you right now.
I would ask for 90 minutes head start.
You know what I'd ask for?
What?
A goddamn sandwich, because I ain't had none to eat all day because you told me I was going to get one. You didn't bring me one.
I'm sorry. Did the reporter give him $5?
Or a sandwich?
Yeah, he gave him $5 and called the police on him. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Called the police.
Called the police on his head. Now, see, that's aren't they supposed unethical. To protect their informants? That's unethical.
Unethical behavior.
I mean, once you exchange that $5, there is confidentiality of the lawyer patient.
I don't think you should be.
It's lawyer patient confidentiality.
No, that's not it at all. And I don't think you should be. I don't think that journalists pay for information. So,
well, okay,
that was unethical to begin with. But anyway,
so the point is, catch up with him.
Yeah, they get him.
And he turns out that he had. They arrested him in a downtown shooting gallery where he had just shot his 23rd bullseye in a row with a .22 rifle.
Okay, and that's this guy's a little creepy. Like,
well, the police said, why do you think you're a suspect? He said, I'm my own suspect. Now, he claimed to have been in a coma for several weeks, and he woke up from the coma on May 3rd with his rifle missing and heard about a suspect matching his description. Then he hitchhiked from Los Angeles, feeling like he was running from murder. He said that he was discharged for the Air Force being a psychoneurotic in 1945. Chief of police said, I feel that the man is just certainly a mental case.
It may be.
The Texarkana's murders could have been the work of a mental case, so far as we know. This man could have done it, but we have absolutely no facts. They'll have to be developed. Yeah,
they got all kind of false confessions out of this.
And they said that, you know, so many things that he said had no basis in fact at all.
Yeah.
Now there was another guy. They arrested they don't even give this guy's name.
Is this the guy they hypnotized?
Yeah, 30-year-old black guy. His tire tracks were found on the other side of the road from Martin's corpse in this. And he failed a polygraph exam. So the officers decided to have him hypnotized. I didn't know they could just decide to do that.
Well, a polygraph are unreliable now. I'm sure in 1946 they were not very reliable. And if polygraph is unreliable, you know hypnosis is unreliable.
Oh, I believe in hypnosis.
All right, but go ahead.
I believe in hypnosis because I was actually...
Did anyone ever make you fly like a chicken?
No, I had been hypnotized to see my former lives, and it turns out I was a Mayan warrior.
Really?
At one
pretty
time.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. I was, in the 1920s, I was a Union
until
starter.
2012.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
because then the world ended.
Right.
And what were you before that?
I started the car unions.
Did you?
Yeah, started the car unions.
Were you ever a harlot?
No, I was never a woman, but I was a pirate at one time.
Really?
I was a pirate.
I can see.
I was even a dolphin.
I can see you with a parrot on your shoulder. I think that's a good look for you.
You know what I didn't like? The one eye patch.
Yeah.
Because your depth perception all messed up.
How did you do with the hook?
You know what?
Had the worst time wiping his ass.
Well, and plus,
and masturbation was a bitch.
Well, it depends. No, actually, it's pretty handy because you used the one
hand. Was it handy?
Back to the story. So back to the story.
Okay. But anyway.
Why do we do this to ourselves?
So they take this man to see a psychiatrist named Travis Elliott. Never go to a psychiatrist named Travis. Okay, because...
Or Elliot.
Well, no, Travis, it's well known that Travis is a name associated with molestation. What they do is they hypnotize you, molest you, they put you under, they sodomize you, and then that's why I never go to a psychiatrist.
That sounds like your Saturday night.
So I never go to a psychiatrist named Travis.
All right.
So anyway, Elliot talks to this Travis... has a private session with the man. Of course, it's private because he's going to hypnotize him and sodomize him.
Did he swing a watch in front of his face?
Uh-uh, he hit him in the top of the head with a ball-peen hammer. That's what's easier. All right, it's easiest way to hypnotize
somebody. What happened
somebody.
When he hypnotized the dude?
He said he could be, you have the wrong man. He has no criminal tendencies. And later he said, the technique I used on this man was to get him to completely relax. Then I started counting by ones, twos, threes to 100, and then backwards. And then I hit him on the head with a ball-peen hammer.
I don't think that was part of the story.
I had established in his mind that I was his friend.
Nice.
Until I hit him with the ball-peen hammer.
You did not hit him with a hammer.
I told him that I was his friend. He believed that I was his friend. I told him I would be right back. I was going to get him a sandwich. I came back without the sandwich. I was never his friend.
Bastard.
Yeah. So, he was completely relaxed, but he was hungrier than hell.
Okay. So what did he do under hypnosis? What did he say?
He clucked like a chicken.
The critical stage is the next state where the subject is...
Did he do the funky chicken?
Cataleptic. The longer you keep them in the state of catalepsy, the deeper they sink into the third state.
Bullshit.
I kept him 10 minutes in this state of catalepsy. He was in a state of extreme exhaustion. Sweat was on his face, and I... Oh, I don't even want to talk about what Travis did to the poor man.
No. Yeah. What did he... Suffice to say, it involved
taking his britches to...
No, it did not. What did he say?
He said, I asked him if he killed Betty Jo Booker, and he said, no. And then I asked him who did it. He said, I don't know. And then it was revealed on the night of the Booker murder, the suspect had spent some time with a friend, dropped him off at home, and then pulled over on the side of North Park Road to urinate. He then visited his paramour.
Oh,
but after the plans did not work out, he went home and went to bed.
You know, you need a pair of paramours. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and now Sheriff Presley and his officers then checked the details of the man's story and cleared him. Why? Because they went back and, I guess, sniffed the weeds or something and they could smell his urine? I don't know.
Well, maybe they talked to the paramour and the paramour.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know his story, but anyway,
he healed from the head wound and the sodomy and all that.
Okay, so
he really healed from sodomy?
Huh?
Do you ever really heal from sodomy?
Brandy, your dad is in law enforcement. Do they ever use hypnosis?
Yes.
Do they really?
Yep.
Do they use sodomy?
Does he believe hypnosis is helpful?
My dad was certified to do it.
Really?
Yeah, he used to hypnotize me all the time.
Is that what happened to you?
He needs to bring you out of it. He puts you in some kind of state that he needs to snap his fingers.
Have
you
ever brought in psychics?
I don't know. I would be surprised. He's not real big into that.
Now think about this. There might be this sweet, kind woman underneath the mess we're looking at.
There is not.
She might be hypnotized to be mean.
There's public parking under that.
Hold on. Look at me, devil. You are feeling sleepy. You are relaxed.
I am feeling sleepy.
Yeah, because we're 4 hours into this podcast. What happens next, Colonel? Is that it?
Okay, let's get to the trial.
No trial.
Goddamn right there ain't no trial. You know why there ain't no trial? And you know why they didn't catch him?
Why?
Because all the officers was hungry.
No.
They didn't have a Snickers bar.
So, you know what else happened?
Well, not much.
They made a movie about it.
Let me tell you.
A bunch of people confessed to this, but, you know.
They never did.
It was all crackpots.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say, now I'm wrapping up my part. I'm probably not even going to participate. I'm weak.
Okay,
I'm
tired. Wait a minute. Let me just tell you what else happened next.
My hands are shaking.
So, after, remember the Starks, the man and woman that got shot in their home, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 4 days after the Starks' murder, on Tuesday, May 7, 1946, which, by the way, was just 2 days before my birthday, although it was 15 years prior.
Always say that.
But on Tuesday, May the 7th, 1946, 4 days after the Starks' murder, a body of a man was found at the Kansas City Southern Railway track 16 miles north of Texarkana. The man was lying face down. His arms had been severed at the elbow and legs severed at the hip. He was on the inside tracks of the rail line. And a freight train had hit him around 5:30 in the morning.
What was the cause of death?
Well, let me get to that. The body was taken to a local funeral home for examination. And the coroner who examined the body, conclusion was that death was at the hands of a person or persons unknown. And that the dead body, he was laid on the tracks after he was killed.
Oh, that's just an insult to injury.
Now, the local sheriff, this was a little different district. It was a Little River County sheriff. Like the Little River Band?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. He scoffed.
Lady!
Scoffed!
Yeah, so he scoffed at the idea that the man was murdered, and he said he just fell. The sheriff felt that he just fell onto the train tracks. It was an accident. So he asked the coroner to review the evidence again. The coroner did, and the second time was even more convinced that there was foul play afoot because he found a deep cut over the man's temple, 2 inches wide and 1.5 inches long, which was sufficiently deep enough to cause death. He also found cuts on the man's hand and wrist, which would indicate the man had grappled with another person who had a knife. These wounds were clean and indicated that the cuts were made with a sharp instrument. The wounds which were believed to the man received when his body was struck by the train were full of dirt and were jagged. So the coroner believed that the man was dead a full two to three hours prior to being placed on a railroad track.
Like Snidely Whiplash.
Mm-hmm. And that there was not enough blood around the wounds which caused his death before being found. So blood was found on the street near the crime scene supporting the coroner's theory. But the police, again, the local sheriff, did not buy into that. The man was identified as Earl Cliff McSpadden. This is the victim.
McSpadden?
McSpadden. Cliff.
Like he was fly?
He was a
different.
He was a transient worker from Baltimore. And many people believe he is actually the sixth victim of the Phantom Killer because, again, this is a small community. They don't have a lot of crime. And
he didn't have no gunshots.
He didn't have any gunshots. He was killed probably by a knife. But, it was only 10 miles from where these other incidents occurred and only 4 days after the Starks were killed.
So they're going to hang everything on this poor bastard?
This guy. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying that a lot of people believe that he was the victim. Now, the curious thing is after this, after the Starks, depending on what theory you believe, if you believe that the Starks were the last victims, after the Starks or after this guy died 4 days later, the murders just stopped. So whether or not this guy was the sixth victim or not, the murders just stopped, which would lead you to think
either... That guy was the murderer.
The guy that they arrested, Yoel, right, Sweeney?
Yeah.
Who got put away for car theft. Or the killer just left town, or he died. Or possibly, maybe the murders... There were some murders that were not related. Maybe someone had it in for the Stark, Virgil Starks, because that was a whole... And, the serial killer's running loose. That's the time to go knock someone off, right?
It really is.
You know, this is what I don't... This, you know, poor Virgil.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. He's sitting there. He's just about dead.
Putting on his heating pad. Listening to Phoebe McGee and Molly.
Yeah. And you know what? He looks up and he's... his last thought is, somebody finally shut that witch in the mouth.
And bring me a sandwich.
And bring me, oh, I'm going to die.
Actually, he probably got the, I mean, if you have to go, he probably got the best deal. I mean, he didn't get beat up. He didn't get raped. He just got shot.
He just got shot, yeah. Yeah. Because this guy shoved a barrel of a gun inside you. You don't want to mess with this guy. Ted Bundy did some crazy shit, but he didn't ever do nothing with the barrel of a gun. Now,
so, yeah, Gacy.
He was great. I mean, he used fireplace pokers and all kinds of nasty things. But, you know, Timmy, we got to wrap this up because the colonel just fading away. And as you people might know, the colonel not a svelte man. And
I think you got enough reserves.
You don't keep this physique by missing lunch. Yeah, ain't easy to keep this kind of physique on the colonel.
Yeah, I understand. You're the baddest man in podcasting. I was going to ask you about that because most dangerous man. Because, you know, what do you think about this whole East Coast, West Coast podcasting thing that's going on? You're Midwest. You're kind of like the Eminem of podcasting.
You know, and really, I mean, I think podcasting is a relatively new thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's room for everybody in it.
There's not.
But if I gotta make either the East Coast or West Coast my bitches, I do it in a heartbeat. You wanna give me some lip?
Okay.
I'll come up there and I'll take your Yeti and slap you right upside your damn head with it. Ain't nobody wanna get Yeti? Into a war with the Colonel.
Excuse me, Colonel. Brandy, what is your theory on who did these murders? You have any thoughts?
It's not the coma guy.
Yeah, I know it's not
the coma guy. You know, I think it was Yule. I think he was the best. Or even the guy that left all the incoherent ramblings.
Okay, the guy confessed. There was a lot of false confessions.
I mean, but
yeah, I think it was the sheriff. I think it was Max Tackett.
It might have been. Nothing. It might have been Mrs. Stark. It might have been a murder-suicide attempt. She shot herself in the head.
It might have.
Nah, I think it was Yole Sweeney.
I think it was Yole. My conclusion is it was Yole.
All right. That's going to be your final word.
I got another conclusion, too.
Final word?
Now,
wood,
listeners, wood. Where can you find me? Well, probably laying on my desk unconscious with the low blood sugar and the low diabetes. But Stitcher. You can look for us on Stitcher. You won't find us because I don't know how to find us on Stitcher. You can get us on YouTube.
No. iTunes.
Facebook. See, the Colonel mind going.
Facebook.
You know what? Anybody Halloween, got a piece of candy everybody. Or anything?
If you found us once, find us again.
Anybody
Happy
got
Halloween.
Some candy? I'll
see you next time.
Cracker.
Why are you still talking?
Goodbye. Say goodbye, Colonel.
Goodbye, Colonel.
Goodbye, Colonel.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.